genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Every show has a theme, and today's theme is, what is the government doing? My first guest analyzed President Obama's proposed economic stimulus plan. My next guest is an expert in the field of internet child safety. She's testified before the U.S. Congress on this subject. The internet, let's face it, it's a wild place. Every time your child logs onto the internet, she or he is exposed to adult content, inappropriate sites, and predatory adults. Children looking for information or friends or even communities are taken to seedy online neighborhoods or accosted by unsolicited emails and instant messages. Lately, a disturbing new trend is child identity theft, and that's appeared on the list of concerns that parents have to have about the internet. My next guest is Linda Credell. She's the CEO of Safe Internet Alliance, whose goal is to establish a safe and open internet as the cornerstone upon which consumers, companies, and countries can build their digital future by doing several things: working with policymakers on Capitol Hill and with the administration, and engaging directly with software designers, online engineers, and hardware manufacturers to strengthen the protection of consumers. Linda's organization's motto is, know the facts, understand the issues, and shape the future. Welcome back to the show, Linda. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you.
Oh, well, thank you for being our guest again on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. And the reason that I'm having you back is this whole burgeoning problem of identity theft for children. So adults, we've been aware of identity theft for some time. I mean, there are even companies like LifeLock and other companies that are out there designed to protect the valuable and confidential information from thieves. Cybercrime is one of the fastest growing categories of crime, mainly because it's difficult to catch the thieves and the laws to prosecute the criminals are weak. Most identity theft, at least at the adult level, happens for financial gain. So first of all, what is identity theft for children? Why is it on the rise? And who is perpetrating this crime?
Well, identity theft for children, and let's make sure that when we're talking about identity theft, we're talking about financial identity theft here.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, you can have other types of identity theft where someone claims to be you and things. So financial identity theft from kids is the same as it is with adults. And that can be kids in any age group. The sweet spot for identity theft victims is between 17 and 25. Most people think it's the seniors, but it's really that age group, and now it's rushing quickly to the youngest, clear to the, month-old babies.
My goodness. All right, Linda. Well, let's go back to what you just said, because that's disturbing. The sweet spot is 17 to 25-year-olds. Why target 17 to 25-year-olds?
Well, they have what is sort of casually referred to as virgin credit. They have yet to get any kind of credit. And that means that their social security numbers are ideal. That means that a criminal can take that and quickly game themselves up to a very good credit rating on those and then run up all kinds of debt. And then when, creditors come calling and they aren't paying and the credit is shut off, they just ditch that one and use a new social security number.
All right. So what are the implications for the 17-year-old or the 18-year-old that has their identity stolen and this happens to them? I mean, what are some of the scenarios that you see?
Well, they go to get that loan for a car or their student loan or, they're older and now they're, trying to get a home or even their first credit card. And what they find is that their credit is completely trashed. And now they have to go back and start proving that indeed they did not make those purchases, take on those loans. When I'm talking to teens and I'm talking to them about identity theft, they quickly say, oh, yeah, if somebody wants to steal the $14 in my bank account. They should go for it. And I say, oh, honey, the $14 is going to be left right there so that you never know you have a problem. It's the $40,000 in loans that I take out. That's where you're going to be in trouble.
All right. Well, this all sounds very diabolical, Linda. So who is it that are perpetrating these types of crimes? Have they caught anybody? And have you been able to sort of characterize what type of person does this?
Well, it largely is organized crime groups, criminal businesses. And if you think about a Social Security number, hacking them is very easy. The criminal doesn't want to steal yours or mine or baby Susie Jones. They just want a Social Security number. So mm-hmm. Here's what happened. Those first three numbers on a Social Security number represent where you were born. It used to be by state. Now it's by zip code. So those first three numbers just say where you're born. The second two numbers indicate when you were born. And it's public knowledge what ranges are for which time periods and for which locales. So then you have only the last four digits that are random numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And ironically, as adults, those are the numbers we give out all the time.
Right.
Give us, and so you're thinking, if my birth certificate is public record, so where I was born and when I was born is public record. If I give away those last four numbers, everything is known. But with kids, what they're doing is they are saying, okay, in this area, we know that they're in this series of numbers.
Right.
We can get the first five numbers down. Then they're using just random number generators to come up with numbers that they ping to see which ones are valid. Then they take those and sell them to people who want to go on a spree with a fake ID.
Wow, this is disturbing stuff. We're talking to Linda Crudell, everybody. She's the CEO of the Safe Internet Alliance, and the subject is child identity theft. And you've just taught me tons of new stuff, Linda, certainly about the Social Security number, the nine-digit Social Security number. I didn't know how those numbers were arranged or what they stood for. So that has just, in and of itself, been very eye-opening. It's also somewhat disturbing to me that whenever we are asked to identify who we are, we're asked for the four last digits, which are the only real secure digits in the entire Social Security number. So that's wild. So let's put the shoe on the other foot for just a moment. Now that we're aware that this is a problem, Linda, all right, what can parents and certainly older children do to prevent this from happening to them?
Well, there are kind of two schools of thought here. The one school of thought is that you are checking your kids from day one, their credit, just like you should be checking your own at least three times a year. And your reader should know that they have the right to three free credit reports a year by law, one from each of the three big credit unions, Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax. And so one school of thought says start checking your kids just like you check your own. The other school of thought is, well, if you check it, it may create a credit file, even though there's nothing in it, that makes it easier for a thief to identify it as a credit card a Social Security card, but with no credit yet associated with it, and make them increase their likelihood for being a victim. I fall in the middle. I say you should be checking, but you should place a freeze on their credit. That means nobody, not even the child, can take out credit against that Social Security number. And I recommend the same thing for adults.
All right.
Now, when that child gets to whatever age that they need a credit card or they're getting a loan or whatever, unfreeze it. That's a very simple process. Usually costs you about $10. And then, get the credit that you need and freeze it again. I recommend the same thing for adults. If you're not actively seeking credit, freeze it.
All right. That's a good idea. Now, just give us a little bit more detail on freezing the credit. It costs only about $10, so that's a nominal fee. But what steps do you do to take that? Do you go to all three of the credit agencies and ask them to freeze the credit?
No, you only need to go to one.
Ah.
And that will get frozen. And then what it means is that additional steps have to be taken before you can get a credit card or before you can get a loan. and that protects you as a user. And the thing with can a criminal get around that? Yes, but they have to go to a great deal of effort to do so. They go to a considerably more risk, and there are so many numbers to pick from that they're not going to go for one that's giving them problems.
Right. Why do something that's hard when you can do something that's easy? We're talking to Linda Credell, everybody. She's the CEO of the Safe Internet Alliance. So, Linda, if child identity theft is becoming more common, why is this such an underreported story in the media?
Well, because it's an under-identified problem. How do you know, all of your listeners, if they have children or grandchildren, they probably never considered, gosh, I wonder if I need to find out if their identity is stolen. It usually goes 18 years from the time, if you're stealing babies' numbers, before you get to a point that kid is going to find out. And, you know, as adults, we know that the sooner you identify the problem, the easier it is to clean up. Well, you wait 18 years or 15 years or whatever it may be, and that's a heck of a problem to have. And that can haunt them for the rest of their lives with higher interest rates and things. So it's really important that people are aware of the issue, and it's really important that they push on their elected officials to help make one simple change. Here, I live in Washington State, and I have asked the Washington State Attorney General, a fine gentleman by the name of Rob McKenna, to require that credit-issuing companies do one more step. They should be looking for the date of that Social Security number, to look at those two digits and say, I'm being asked to approve a home loan for somebody whose this Social Security number would indicate that they are a two-year-old.
All right, so that makes sense, too. I mean, a two-year-old, that should stand out in most anybody's mind that the person applying for credit isn't credit-worthy or shouldn't be applying for credit at all. You're saying that today that step is not taken.
That step is not taken. Now, to be clear, there are many legitimate reasons that adults are getting a new Social Security number. They may have, come into the country and be getting a new number. There may be someone whose Social Security number was so compromised that they need a new one issued. But it should be a red flag, and it should be something that says, I at least need to investigate this further and not simply hand out, all kinds of credit to this account without a little bit more due diligence.
That makes sense. We're talking to Linda Credell, everybody, the CEO of the Safe Internet Alliance. Linda, this all seems very practical, and the organization that we're talking about here really is trying to get policymakers to think about the credit and to take steps. Tell us a little bit more about the Safe Internet Alliance and sort of expand on what it is that you all do.
Well, we work primarily with the companies and with elected officials at the state and though mostly national level to say, here, as we're looking at how to create a safer environment for consumers, overall safer environment, what does that take? Right now we are about to release a set of standards that we call Standards for Respectful Companies, and there are 10 points that will considerably improve the safety and privacy of consumers online, and that we believe that respectful companies will step up to. We've had tremendous support in this process from several very reputable companies, Microsoft, AOL, Yahoo, Cisco, Verizon, and the list goes on. But we want to put that out there. We want to give recognition so that consumers can come and say, there's 500 companies that are providing social networks. Facebook is the most well-known,
sure,
but there's a whole bunch of others. And I want to know how all of these, or at least the top 10, stack up against these standards for privacy. Are they making things clear? Are they giving me settings? Are they protecting my information? Are they allowing me to identify how safe their service really is? And give consumers that added confidence, but also give the companies that are doing the right thing the recognition that they're doing the right thing thereby encouraging other companies to step up and do the right thing as well.
That makes sense. We're talking to Linda Crudell, everybody. Where would people go to find those 10 standards for respectful companies, Linda, if they wanted to learn more about it, if they're hearing the sound of your voice?
Yes, they can go to thesafeinternet.org.
Safeinternet.org. Safeinternet.org. Just as simple as that. Safeinternet.org. Linda, we're going to have to break here to do some commercials. When we come back, though, I want to dig into another problem that is plaguing parents and their children on the Internet. That's the whole issue of cyberbullying. Let's not get into that now. We'll get into it after we get back from this short break.
And now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
The Living Brain.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bill Frank. You're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ AM 1400, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. You can also listen to our shows live streaming over the Internet by going to brainstormingonline.com. There's a big Listen Live button at the top of the page. Click that, and it will take you to each of our broadcasts. All right, today's theme for the show is, what is the government doing? And our guest that we're talking to right now is Linda Crudell. She is an expert in the field of Internet child safety. We were discussing before the commercial break one of the more disturbing aspects of the criminal element right now, and that is child identity theft. But equally concerning to me as a grandparent, Linda, is this growing trend of cyberbullying. Now, cyberbullying is a crime that's out there, made really pretty much famous nationally by Leah Murphy case back in New York. And then there's a recent video on the Internet that has gone viral where a parent of a bullied child absolutely goes ballistic. And those are some of the more visible examples that are out there. So how would you advise parents to protect their children against cyberbullying in the Internet world?
Yeah, there's a few key steps. One, the parents should be advising their kids to know who their friends are. They're, especially younger teens, go through a phase where the more friends I have, the cooler I am, and friends becomes a very loose term where they may have 1,000 friends online, most of whom they've never met. They're better off restricting that to people they really do know. And I find that the older teens start pruning their lists because they find that they really don't have, you know, interest in all of those people, nor do they want to share. So helping kids keep that list real is a step one. Two, even among those real, because most cyberbullying is an extension of offline bullying where they're people that you do know.
Right.
Not always the case, but most of them are. And so it's, one, making sure that your kid acts decently. You know, if you're snotty to a bunch of people, then you're more likely to have people be snotty back at you. I mean, we all learn that. It's just how it goes. So if your kid can act respectfully and responsibly online towards other people, they will have less risk of being bullied and having people angry at them. That said, some kids get bullied anyway. Now, kids who get bullied, they usually have less of a support network around them. And so one thing that all parents can do is to help their kids have a stronger support network around them. And then they should be cautious of expressing emotional vulnerability, you know, because that can make people want to pick on them. It identifies them as someone who could get, you know, their feelings hurt more carefully. Then the biggest thing that parents can do is to guarantee to their child that they're there to support them. If there's any problem, that they're there to support them. A lot of times parents want to go into this, well, what were you doing, and how could you have, you know, done something? At the time the kid comes to you for help, what they need is your help in getting them out of a problem. You can discuss all the rest of it at some other time.
Mm.
But that bullying can take a lot of forms. It can be, you know, a child may have taken it, an image of themselves that's inappropriate. And the bullying may be that that's being spread everywhere. And people are, you know, seeing this, you know, sexting image. And you know, everyone's laughing at them. It could be that they've created a fake website about this person and, you know, gotten all their friends upset by pretending that they've said all kinds of mean things about them. It can come in a lot of different forms, and for parents to keep an open communication with their kids and say, if there's a problem, come to me, and I will help. And helping doesn't mean necessarily, you know, that I'm going to go postal and everything else.
Like that helping, one father did.
Yeah. Helping means I'm actually going to work with my child to figure out the best solution here. Sometimes it's going to the other child, you know, if they know the person, and saying, hey, let's sit down. There's a problem here. Sometimes it's going to that child's parent, if you know them. Sometimes it's going to the school. Schools now have to respond and ensure that any child has a safe, positive learning environment. So if they're being threatened online and they feel unsafe in school or ashamed or you know, whatever, the school must take action, and the parent needs to be that child's best advocate. What they should never do is retaliate. It just plays a game of escalation. And your child can become a bully themselves, and you just don't want that.
We're talking to Linda Crudell, everybody. Those are some great ideas about cyberbullying. It's a growing and epidemic on the Internet. But in the middle of everything that you're saying, Linda, is the fact that the child that's going to be protected from this or helped through it comes from a nurturing, loving family and so forth. Have you done any studies to notice, is cyberbullying more prevalent among dysfunctional or broken families or families of single parents, or is it universal across the board?
You know, I don't know of a study that actually looks at the family life of victims. To be quite honest, that would be a fascinating piece of research. I do not know of it. That doesn't say that it doesn't exist, but I try to keep up.
Well, no. You are the expert. You would probably know on that. So let me go back to some other things that you said, which were also equally fascinating. Keep your child acting respectfully on the Internet. Now, that in and of itself is a challenge because parents many times don't know what their children are doing. And then if they do know what they're doing, many times the parents themselves don't know how to act respectfully on the Internet. So how do you address that concern?
Yeah, I think, you know, the golden rule applies. And I'm not talking about the one that's he who has the gold rules. if everyone says, I'm only going to treat other people the way I want to be treated, they're going to come out of it pretty well on acting respectfully and responsibly towards others online. If I wouldn't want that information about me shared, I will not share it of another. If I wouldn't want someone to say something like that to me, I will not say it of another. And so parents don't have to be, you know, these super technical, cyber savvy geniuses to convey that message. Online, offline, we live in one world. And the way we treat others needs to always be respectful.
I like that. We're talking to Linda Crudell, everybody. And let's talk about that one world, because it is a different world. I do see a generational difference here between, say, my generation and my grandchildren's generation. And that is that kids growing up today are far more at ease with the technology that's out there. And more importantly, they're far more at ease about being public of what they're doing. I mean, Foursquare, you know, letting people know exactly where you are and what you're doing at any given time. These children, my grandchildren, are growing up in the environment where all of that information should be shared freely. So how, as a parent, do you help them to differentiate what to share and what not to share when their cultural norm is to share everything?
Yeah, I think we're going through a transitional phase with the Internet. It's all new and there's so many experiments going on. I find that when I first start talking to teens and tweens, that they have very little sense of why they might want to protect any piece of information. They want to live their lives out there. But once we start talking about what that really means, their sense of I want privacy escalates very quickly. Mm. Now, there will always be some people who say, my life is an open book. And I always say to them, really? Really? You know, I don't have any dirty secrets. But my life is not an open book. I really don't want people to know if you know, I'm struggling with my weight or I'm, you know, mad at a friend or that I'm in this location versus that location. You know, it's not that I'm doing anything wrong, But if we think about our own lives, we want a lot of things filtered. And I don't believe there's anybody who truly wants the world to know every last thought they have. And so once you help people understand the ramifications, I find that teens have a pretty healthy sense of privacy.
All right. We're talking to Linda Credell, everybody, CEO of Safe Internet Alliance. And that, again, is the website for your organization is, Linda?
SafeInternet.org.
SafeInternet.org. All right. And then one of the other things that you mentioned when we were talking about cyberbullying is this whole subject of sexting. Mm-hmm. And inappropriate pictures, inappropriate videos perhaps even out there that might be kept on their Facebook page or shared and so forth. How do you prevent that from getting out there? But more importantly, why has sexting grown as an activity that teens want to do in the first place?
You know, it boils down to this. It seemed like a good idea at the time. You know, and I have to say, at my age, I look back at, you know, just the strangest things I've done. And nothing embarrassing, per se, other than for the sheer stupidity factor. But I look back and I think, what was I thinking? And all I can say is, well, it seemed like a good idea at the time. It seemed like a good idea to not get gas here, but get, you know, even though I'm on empty, but get to the next gas station where I know it's cheaper. And you run out of gas in between and you're thinking, why didn't I get gas? So it doesn't have to be anything horrible, but we are in a society right now that is putting extraordinarily heavy sexualization on our youth. Everything they see is highly sexualized. You know, we're glorifying pimps. We are glorifying, you know, prostitution. We are tramp and scum is in. For just a huge amount of the media. And so helping kids understand that that's not the projection of themselves they want to convey is one thing. But there's huge pressure on kids to share images and things and have, I mean, images, videos, and highly inappropriate text, highly sexualized text. And conversation. Mm-hmm. And so helping kids say that that's not respecting yourself, that's not respecting others. The person who asks you for a photo like that does not respect you. The idea that I will never share it with anyone if you send it to me is absurd. They don't even have control over that necessarily. They may leave their phone and a friend may pick it up and may find that photo and may decide to send it on.
Sure.
The moment that a person, and the amount of adult sexting is also quite a number, but the moment a person sends an image, they have no control of what happens to it. No control. What that other person chooses to do with it is entirely out of the originator's hands.
All right. And we're talking to Linda Credell, everybody. Linda, we've only got 1 minute left. What is the role of government, schools, religious communities, and the parents in helping the children to understand this new digital world?
Three things. There is the education, really helping them understand how to use them respectfully, and how to maintain their privacy. The second one is enforcement. Now, we always think of law enforcement, but homes, families need to say, these are the expectations that we have, and here's the consequences for failure to adhere to those. And schools have that role. Every level has that role. And the last one is the infrastructure that you put around them. So you have, you know, perhaps family safety settings, that you have, you know, an environment where they can talk and come to you. All of these pieces, the education, providing that infrastructure that's going to help them be safer, and enforcing needs to be the role of families, schools, government, the products and services themselves, and any support network, the religious groups, the organizations. Everyone has a role.
Thank you, Linda Credell. You've been a great guest. Linda Credell, CEO of the Safe Internet Alliance at safeinternet.org. We'll be talking to you down the road.
Sounds great.